Hello, and welcome to this guided walk produced as part of the 2021 Walk Leicester Festival, in partnership with De Montfort University's Heritage Centre. If you are following along, please be aware of the terrain below your feet and any hazards in your vicinity, and always keep one ear free so you remain conscious of your surroundings and other cyclists, pedestrians and dog walkers using the path. The terrain when walking may change due to weather, so please remember to wear appropriate footwear and bring along anything you may need to help you enjoy your walk. Please also observe social distancing guidelines where possible. To find more guided walks across a range of subjects, or to take part in the Walk Leicester Festival, please visit choosehowyoumove.co.uk/walkleicester.
At the DMU Heritage Centre, we are responsible for delivering a range of engaging exhibitions and providing public access to several historically important buildings. We also work to encourage learning through a variety of tours, lectures, outreach events, and partnerships. We hope that you enjoy this self-guided tour, exploring the history that surrounds our campus.
De Montfort University and its campus sit at the heart of Leicester, in an area that is steeped in history. This self-guided tour will give you an insight into one of the oldest parts of the city, from its ancient origins to its manufacturing heyday. Before we begin, here is a little on the background of the area known as the Newark and Castle Precincts, and how these became part of our campus. Our earliest inhabitants are thought to date back to the late Iron Age, around the 1st century BC, with the discovery of a ditch in Newark House's garden and some fragments of pottery found close to Bonner's Lane. It tells us that the area was primarily agricultural. Following the arrival of the Romans in 44 AD, the area became a suburb of the main town, sitting just south of the city. The land remained agricultural, but human remains have been discovered along Oxford Street. It was the custom, during the Roman period, to bury the dead along the main roads leading out of the towns. Using the natural defence of the River Soar, the Romans built walls to protect the city, extending to this area. These features were later used by the Normans when they established Leicester Castle. Leicester Castle is where our story truly starts, as it brought the first major group of inhabitants to the campus area and started a chain of historic events that helped shape the story of Leicester. For example, the Castle Great Hall has played host to Parliament on three occasions. Subsequently, the hall became a criminal court from the 1400s until 1992, making it one of the longest running courts in the whole of the country. Furthermore, the castle's medieval residents are credited for expanding the area beyond the castle precinct and commissioning the construction of a hospital and a church. These foundations are responsible for the area's name, as the residents referred to its construction as Newark, which eventually was corrupted to Newark. Like the castle precinct, the Newark has a significant history, from its connection to the story of King Richard III and its role in the Civil War, to its changing landscape during the Industrial Revolution, where orchards and gardens were replaced with factories and smoking chimneys. DMU's association with the Newark dates back to 1897, when our predecessor, the Leicester Municipal Technical and Arts School, was established. As the institution grew, so did its occupancy of the site, sensitively converting the medieval buildings and factories alike into teaching and learning spaces for a 21st century university. As we begin our tour, we hope you enjoy learning more about this unique area. The Castle Motte. This raised circular ground, known as the Castle Mound or Motte, is all the remains of the original Norman castle. Constructed on the orders of William the Conqueror, the work was carried out by his trusted companion, Hugh de Grammesnil, Sheriff of Leicester in 1067. The motte and bailey, or mound and enclosure, was a heavily protected structure, surrounded by ditches and ideally positioned to control the Saxon town. The castle was imposing, standing atop the motte which was originally 40 feet tall. It was built from timber and later replaced with stone by Robert de Beaumont, the first Earl of Leicester. The area enclosed by the Bailey would have hosted many other buildings that contributed to the daily life of the castle, such as kitchens, a dancing chamber, the Great Hall, and St. Mary de Castro Church, the official chapel to the castle. The castle became the residence for the earls and later dukes of Lancaster, and reached its peak in the 14th century, as its location made it central to the Lancastrian interest in the Midlands. It was particularly the favourite residence of John of Gaunt, the wealthiest nobleman in the country, and at the time, he invested a lot of money into restoring and redecorating the castle. He was great friends and later brother-in-law to famed poet and author Geoffrey Chaucer, and the two are said to have hosted many elaborate gatherings in the Great Hall. In 1399, John passed away, and consequently, Leicester Castle began to fall into disrepair. In August 1483, Richard III visited Leicester and stayed in the castle. However, it was already beginning to deteriorate. Richard famously stayed at the Blue Boar Inn upon his second visit to Leicester before the Battle of Bosworth, which hints at his regrettable condition at the time. It was later documented that the castle and its surrounding buildings were soon derelict, and after the Civil War, most were demolished. The Great Hall. The Great Hall is the only part of the castle that remains today. It is thought to be the oldest surviving aisle and bay-divided timber hall in Britain, and dates to around 1150. Robert Le Bossu, the second Earl of Leicester and founder of Leicester Abbey, is credited with constructing the Great Hall. It was made using oak trees sourced from the Royal Forests and once had a reputation as the grandest in all of Europe, and soon became sensitively known as the Palace of the Midlands. Hosting a nave 7 metres wide and thick sandstone walls, it was elaborately decorated with a raised platform or die, showcasing the Lord's Table at the north end and an open timber roof. As evidence from the dark colour of the timber, it is believed that a giant hearth would have been found in the very centre of the Great Hall, providing heat and a somewhat smoky atmosphere for the guests. Primarily a communal living space for castle residents, the hall also housed administrative offices and was also used as a court, making use of the castle's very own prison. The Great Hall was used for the courts of the assize from 1273. Where the most serious local cases were heard, from murder to witchcraft. Because of this function, the Great Hall has survived, whilst many of the other buildings to the castle have been lost. The brick facade we see today was added in the 17th century, and in 1821, the Great Hall became the city's official courthouse. The interior was divided into two courtrooms, with a cell block and barristers' rooms being added shortly thereafter. In 1888, the county justices officially purchased the building from the Crown, ending any royal connection with the property. James M. Barry, the author of Peter Pan, worked for the Nottingham Journal from 1883 to 84, and was known to spend many hours in the Great Hall courtrooms reporting on trials. The Criminal Court also hosted Leicester's most infamous murder trial in 1920. The Green Bicycle Mystery. The victim was a young woman called Bella Wright, who was shot and killed in the nearby village of Little Stretton. Witnesses recalled seeing her with a man on a green bike shortly before she met her end. Ronald Light, a World War I veteran, was tried, but eventually acquitted, leaving the case unsolved. The courts were in use until 1992. When they finally moved to a new location in the city centre based at Pocklington's Walk. The Great Hall has remained largely vacant until 2016, when it was leased by DMU for the creation of the business school. The Great Hall was restored in partnership with English Heritage and is open to the public for special events. We are pleased to bring it back into use, sharing its heritage and character with the community. St Mary de Castro Church. We are very lucky to have a wonderful partnership with the church and work together to promote the heritage of the area. If the church gates are open, please feel free to walk around the site. St Mary de Castro is Leicester's second oldest church after St Nicholas, dating back to 1107. The church's name, literally St Mary of the Castle, helped to differentiate it from St Mary de Pratis, which later became known as Leicester Abbey. It is said that an earlier structure was either founded or renovated by Ethelfleda, Lady of the Mercians, after she freed Leicester from Viking rule, which would suggest a religious house has been in existence on the site from before 918. Nonetheless, any structure that stood on the site was pulled down in 1067 after the Normans took control of the town. The first Norman structure would most likely have been one long, aisleless church, essentially a long, low stone hall. Over the centuries, the church has undergone a series of expansions and alterations, but parts of its Norman features still survive. The sedilia, seats made of stone set back into the main wall of the chapel, have been described as the finest piece of Norman decoration in the county. The church would have held much importance in medieval times. It has been suggested that English poet Geoffrey Chaucer married here in 1366, and the young King Henry VI and Richard III's father, Richard of York, were knighted here in the church. It is also recorded to have held Mass for the members of Parliament when they convened in the Castle Great Hall in 1349, 1414 and 1426. St Mary de Castro has been much altered over time. The tower, built in the 13th century, and the spire was added in the 15th. And continuing with its tradition of change, once again the church spire has been removed after being deemed unsafe in 2014.
The Castle Inn. In June 2018, DMU and the Students' Union began work on converting two small cottages at 8 and 9 Castle View into a micropub. The cottages date back to the 1700s and had been in use for various small businesses until the 1990s, and since then had been left unused. The Castle Inn is managed by the DMU Students' Union on behalf of the university, but is open to all thirsty patrons. They aim to support local businesses, promote sustainability, and remain plastic-free. However, this is not the first public house to feature on the cobbled street. For many years, a pub stood next door to the turret gateway at number 12, Castle View. The earliest recorded pub here dates to 1771, when it was called the Roundhead Inn, a name that refers to the Newark's parliamentarian history. The pub was central to political activity during the Victorian era, with the premises often being lent as a venue for political meetings. It's also where the local bowls team would drink following their matches on the castle motte. The pub closed in 1968 and the building was used as offices for the court for a couple of decades before it became a PhD research centre for De Montfort University. Turret Gateway. Built in 1423, the turret gateway separated the religious precinct from the inner bailey of the castle. Where the Newark Gateway acted as the main entrance to the religious precinct, Turret Gateway was a private entrance meant to control access to the castle grounds. Previously, there was a two-story house above the gateway, likely home to a porter to the castle yard. The house was badly damaged, however, in the Siege of Leicester during the Civil War. Just behind the gate to the right, in the gardens of the Newark Houses Museum, visitors can still see the holes created to fire on the advancing royalist forces. Turret Gateway is often referred to as Rupert's Gateway, due to the Newark's connection to Prince Rupert's violent attack in 1645. Leicester was largely parliamentarian, but despite a noble effort from men, women and children, the Newark's medieval walls could not defend the attack. However, the actual Rupert's Gateway was demolished in 1833, and the name has been wrongly transferred. The building was further damaged during the election riots of 1773 and 1787, with the house above being completely destroyed. But what remains today has been restored by the City Council and creates a dynamic transition between the busy DMU
and the quiet space of the castle yard and gardens. That is, of course, unless you believe the folklore of Black Annis, a frightful witch with sharp iron fingernails and a taste for human flesh. She is said to lurk within the darkness of the gateway, hiding in underground passages and snaring any who dare pass through at midnight, dragging them back to her cave to add to her collection of monstrous trophies. Trinity Hospital. The Hospital of the Honour of God and the Glorious Virgin and All Saints was founded in 1330 by Henry Plantagenet, the third Earl of Lancaster and Leicester, who was grandson of King Henry III and in time became a close advisor to King Edward III. Wanting to demonstrate his commitment to the community and his noble piety, Henry built a hospital that would house 50 patients, both poor and infirm. The hospital had staff including a warden, chaplains and nurses, and a garden to the rear of the building that provided food and medicinal herbs. The medieval building was a long open hall, with two side aisles where patients' beds were placed, and the chapel was based at the east end. This open design ensured that all patients could see and hear chapel services from their beds. Henry died in 1345 and his funeral took place in the hospital chapel, attended by King Edward III. Henry's son, also named Henry, continued his father's charitable spirit by expanding the building so that it could care for up to 100 patients. The patronage of the hospital and the Duchy of Lancaster passed into royal hands with the coronation of another Henry, King Henry IV in 1399, and is still in place today. The name of the institution was shortened to the Hospital of the Holy Trinity by King James I, and its daily management was passed to the Mayor and Alderman of Leicester. As evidenced from the benefactor boards on display in the chapel, the hospital has attracted much patronage and support from the local people. By 1776, the medieval construction was crumbling and in need of repair. It was rebuilt by Joseph Pickford of Derby at the expense of King George III. A long, two-storey building was created with 23 apartments on each floor, rooms for staff, washrooms and sitting rooms. In the 19th century, Leicester was a major manufacturing hub. Factories were built around the city, including the Newark, and change was continuous. In 1901, a new road was put through the Newark to help transfer goods from the city centre to the other side of the river and the growing West End. Unfortunately, part of the hospital was in the way, and it was necessary to demolish one end and rebuild at an angle following the road, a feature which is still clear today. In 1994, the hospital moved to new premises on Western Boulevard, just over the river. The original building was purchased by DMU and is primarily used as offices. Many original features of the chapel remain, and the building is open to the public for special events. Chantry Building. This curious and often overlooked structure is called Chantry Building. It was likely finished in the 1400s, around the same time as the Newark Precinct walls. However, the building has undergone many changes over the centuries. Chantry Building was built as a home for two priests, or a canon and a vicar from the Church of the Annunciation. These priests were responsible for holding Mass and praying for the souls of their founder, Henry Duke of Lancaster, and his family. Originally, the house was two stories and built in well-dressed sandstone from the local Dane Hills. The ground floor consisted of a kitchen and a reception area, with the bedrooms upstairs. This was a modern house for its time and included an indoor toilet, large fireplace and glazed windows. It's thought that at least a dozen dwellings like this one have existed in the Newark. After the church was demolished in 1548, little is known of the building's history until it became the vicarage of the nearby St. Mary de Castro Church in 1675. Many of the other houses in the precinct were sold to prominent Leicester locals, and the Newark developed into a wealthy residential suburb. In the following centuries, the building underwent a series of physical changes that helped to explain its present state.
At some point during the 1800s, a third story was added. However, the weight eventually impacted on the medieval building, and by 1920, it was falling into disrepair. In 1935, Chantry Building was purchased by the neighbouring Portland Shoe Factory, who removed the upper stories and used it as a leather store for some time. De Montfort University took over management of the Grade 2 listed monument in 1991, initially using it as a bicycle store. The building was refurbished by DMU and opened by Prince Edward, Earl of Wessex, in June 2013 as the offices for the DMU Square Mile, who worked to identify and respond to challenges within the local community.
The Church of the Annunciation. The Church of the Annunciation of the Blessed Virgin Mary was constructed in 1353 by Henry, Duke of Lancaster, who was a highly regarded soldier in the Hundred Years' War. Henry was gifted a thorn from the crown of thorns worn by Jesus at the crucifixion from the King of France, and as such wanted to build the church in part to display his valued treasure. As such, when the church was complete, it became a popular place for pilgrimage, with visitors keen to view the thorn, which was displayed in a reliquary of gold on the altar. We have no visual record of what the church looked like, although it was described as exceedingly fair by the antiquarian John Leyland, who also mentioned the pretty houses for the clergy and the stately walls and gates of the Newark. DMU's Digital Building Heritage Group recently completed a digital reconstruction of what they believe the church could have looked like based on research of similar structures of the time. These images can now be viewed in the DMU Heritage Centre. The church performed a chantry function for the House of Lancaster, meaning the deans, canons and vicars who work there prayed for the souls of the family and other local nobility. A significant moment in local history connects the church to the story of King Richard III. In 1485, after the king's defeat at the Battle of Bosworth, one chronicle states that his body was placed on display for 3 days in the Church of the Annunciation, or somewhere on the grounds so that the public would be certain of his death. A chronicle in the British Library states they brought the King Richard there that night as naked as ever he was born, and in the Newark was he laid that many a man might see. Later, his body was taken to the Greyfriars Church for burial because it would have been deeply insulting to bury the King in a church dedicated to his enemy. The church was closed and destroyed in 1548 during the religious reforms, and the land was sold into private hands. A large manor house with gardens was constructed on the site, which had several prestigious owners in its lifetime, including the Coltmans, a hosiery manufacturing family, and Edward Shipley Ellis, chairman of the Midland Railway Company. In 1897, the house and surrounding land was sold for the creation of the Leicester Municipal Technical and Art School, now known as the Hawthorne Building of De Montfort University. Construction of this building took place in several phases, and the old house was not demolished until 1935, when two arches from the ruins of the church were rediscovered in the cellar, along with bones, coffins, and some artifacts. The arches were considered a significant find, and the school decided to retain them within the institution, incorporating them into the design of the new building. They remain in their original location, and can now be seen by the general public in the Hawthorne Building as the centrepiece of the DMU Heritage Centre, which opened its doors in 2015. The Magazine. The Newark Gateway, more commonly known as the Magazine, was built in the early 1400s, around the same time as the enclosing Newark walls, and served as the impressive grand entrance to the visitors of the religious precinct. Owned by Leicester City Council and operated by the Newark Houses Museum, the magazine has played various roles throughout the centuries, including accommodation, a prison, military building, munitions store, and now a heritage space open to the public on special occasions. Built using locally sourced sandstone from the nearby Dane Hills Quarry, the gateway has 3 floors and 2 entrance archways.
the large arch allowing for carriage and cart access, the smaller being used by those on foot. The ground floor was a lodge for the porter, who was responsible for controlling the access to the religious precinct and likely lived here with their family. The first floor was an ensuite, with a doorway leading to a guardrobe, or medieval toilet. The two rooms or apartments on the second story were for visitors of the Collegiate Church of the Annunciation. During the time of Elizabeth I, the gateway was used to hold Catholics who were imprisoned for their beliefs. Two unfortunate locals were kept captive here. Their graffiti can still be seen on the soft stone surface. In 1642, the gatehouse had become known as the Magazine, when the county purchased the building to be used as a munitions store during the English Civil War. This military association continued throughout the years, and in 1894 it was incorporated into a military barracks, and during the First War it was used as a recruiting station. The Magazine also became the house for the Royal Leicestershire Regiment collection before it was moved to Newark House's museum.
And that concludes our self-guided tour for today. If the Castle Inn is open, we think it's a great way to end your walk, or the perfect spot for a short break. Otherwise, thank you for joining us today. And if you're interested in learning more about our heritage site, please feel free to visit us on one of our public opening dates, which are listed on our website at www.dmu.ac.uk/heritagecentre.